everyone, and welcome back to the Fitness Pros for Hurricane Ike Relief Telefundraiser Day 1 as we get on with our third call of the day. First of all, let's thank everyone that has donated to this worthy cause. Your donations are greatly appreciated, and just to understand how you're really helping a lot of families here in the Houston-Galveston area help put their lives back together. And also, I would really love to thank all my guests who have taking the time out of their busy schedules to contribute to this fundraiser. And the first two calls, so much information has been dropped, and I know I don't expect any less from this call right here from this man, because this is my guy right here. This is my brother from another mother, really.
Really.
My man, David Whitley. This is the man when it comes to kettlebells. For those who don't know, David Whitley is one of the elite few senior RKCs. That's the Russian Kettlebell Challenge. And he's one of the very few senior RKCs responsible for teaching and testing at Dragon Door, their renowned RKC instructor certification workshop. I mean, it takes a lot. You have to really, really know your stuff to be a senior RKC. You know, they're trusting their techniques in the hands of some very, very qualified professionals, and David is, he is that, nothing less. And he conducts his kettlebell workshops across the country, and he is the author of the Power Circuit Workout DVD. So definitely make sure you check that out. And this DVD is the first follow-along video combining kettlebell training and bodyweight exercises, which is my favorite way to train. And David has been featured in Nashville's NBC affiliate, Channel 4, and has been interviewed for the Wall Street Journal, the Nashville Rage, and has written articles for Enchanted Bride magazine, as well as many, many more. So right now, I would like to welcome you, David Whitley, to the call. What's going on, my man?
Hey, Sincere. Thanks for having me on the call. It's pretty impressive introduction you gave me there. Somebody's actually been paying attention to what I've been trying to get done these years.
Yeah, I'm watching you, brother. I'm watching you. So what we're talking about today, one of my favorite tools, and I know it's one of yours, I love the kettlebell. You just don't understand. And not just because it's just another toy for me to play with in my home gym, but the things that it's done for my body, especially this body that's getting a little older. And today we've talked a lot to busy parents and people who are, like, you know, a little older and busy, these professionals who really just don't have time to get in the gym and who may have been training improperly in the earlier years of their life, like when they were teens and in their early 20s, and they have injuries now that are kind of popping up as they get older. And now they're kind of being discouraged from training because of those injuries. And what I've come to find out is that kettlebells really help you bust through those obstacles. So that is why I brought you here today, other than the fact that, yes, the title of the show was, you know, why celebrities love them and why you should use them now. You know, obviously celebrities know something that a lot of us don't, but if that's what it's going to take to help people realize the benefits of kettlebells, so be it. But instead of listening to a celebrity, I have my own celebrity. That's why I came to you. A real celebrity in this field right here. So basically, just tell me how you got started training with kettlebells.
Well, I was that guy who used to go to the gym, and, of course, Monday was chest day, as it is in every gym all over the world.
Yeah.
And then you split everything else up into body parts based on what day of the week it is, and then you throw in some, I hate to use the term, cardio on alternating days, and just kind of a typical sort of training routine that everybody reads about in the muscle magazines or that everybody just kind of takes as common knowledge. But the thing about common knowledge is usually it's been distilled down to the lowest common denominator, and it really just is kind of an overview of something that everybody thinks is true but doesn't necessarily elicit the best response. You know, if you go back and look at one of the most popular fitness books ever written, I'm not going to throw names out there, but it's sold multiple millions of copies. The program in it was kind of a standard bodybuilding program that was laid out 3 days a week in a body part split for weights, and then alternating that with 3 days a week of aerobic training and a 6-meal-a-day diet using the supplements that were made by the guy that wrote the book.
Yeah.
And there's nothing wrong with that as an entry-level type thing, you know, but
right.
The genius behind the marketing of that particular product was that the guy that wrote the book made the 17-year-old football player and the 48-year-old woman who wants to get in shape for her class reunion believe that this program was the exact program that they needed, and it was the same program. And that's where I kind of had a problem with it. I don't have a problem with people going to the gym just to exercise, if that's what they want to do, but I don't think of it in terms of exercise anymore. I think of it in terms of training. And it sounds like it's just semantics, but it's not. When you're training, you have a particular objective in mind.
Right.
I'm training to prepare for the RKC certification. I'm training myself to, you know, be a better football player. I'm training to be ready for the class reunion, that sort of thing. Exercise is just kind of mindless hamster on a wheel mentality to me. It's just sort of pointless. So that was the mindset that I was in to begin with. And then I read an article that Pavel Sotsalin, the chief instructor of the RKC, wrote for a magazine in 2003. It was in 2002 that I read the article. And a friend of mine had bought a kettlebell and bought Pavel's original Russian Kettlebell Challenge video on VHS. That tells you how old school we are. And he loaned it to me. That happened. Both of those things happened completely independently of each other in the same week. And so it just all of a sudden this kettlebell thing's right in front of me. And I took the kettlebell home, watched the video, and started playing with it a little bit, and immediately fell in love with it. Because I had found myself gravitating kind of backwards in time from the body part split routine mentality back towards what the guys were doing in the 50s and 60s with the 20-rep squats and that sort of stuff. So I was headed backwards in time anyway, and I was always fascinated by the old-school strength guys from back around the turn of the century, and found out years later that picture that I loved so much when I was a kid of the guy with a barbell overhead and a kettlebell in the other hand was actually Arthur Saxon. So it all kind of came around full circle like that for me. And I had grown up as an overweight kid in school who wanted to be the Hulk because of Lou Ferrigno.
Yeah.
And
I think a lot of kids during that time.
yeah, absolutely. So I'm totally giving away my age here. And if anybody's trying to do the math on it, as of right now, I'm 38. I'll be 39 in November. So, and I'm younger now than I was 12 years ago, guaranteed. I'm in better shape. I'm stronger. I'm more flexible. I'm just all around younger. I even look younger. People that haven't seen me for years have told me that. So that's kind of what guided me in that direction. So watching the video, reading the posts and stuff on Dragon Door's website and starting to study up on what Pavel was having to offer with the kettlebell stuff, the next thing I knew, I'm in Minneapolis in June of 2003 at the Russian Kettlebell Challenge instructor certification. And I had no idea when I went how big an impact it was going to have on me. I was working as a massage therapist at the time. I was overweight because I was following advice that didn't work for me as far as fitness went. I was just kind of exercising. And I trained to try to get in shape for the RKC weekend and was unable to do so because I had no idea how physically demanding it was going to be. But came away from that changed all the way down to almost like a cellular level. I was changed in every aspect regarding training that there is. No longer did I think of doing workouts for different body parts like chest or arms or calves or anything like that.
Right.
Now my paradigm had been shifted to where I started thinking in terms of movement patterns, hip extension, quad dominant movements, vertical and horizontal push and pull, rotation, that sort of stuff, which that led me to realize that if you look at any athletic endeavor, nothing operates off of a single joint or muscle isolation athletic endeavor. The only time that comes into play is in things like bodybuilding, where you're not engaging in an athletic competition where you have to be faster or stronger or knock someone down or anything like that. You just have to look a certain way, and the guy
right.
who looks the best. So isolation-type training, body part training, is great for that because it's kind of the sculptor mentality, right?
Right.
The other end of the spectrum is if someone has an injury and they've got to rehab the weak link of the chain, I'm all about, you know, if they need an isolation-type movement to strengthen a weak link in the chain there, that's fine too, because I'm all about building an unbreakable chain.
Right.
But for pretty much anybody else, it's unnecessary and even counterproductive, because if you just grab a light dumbbell and start doing curls with it, where is the carryover athletically or otherwise? You know, if you think, oh, I want to tone my arms or I want to burn some calories, which is going to burn more calories? Doing a light curl with a dumbbell, which is going to burn more calories and tone the muscles involved in whatever the hell tone even means?
I was just about to ask you, like, what is your definition of tone? Because I feel like I throw it out the window. It's a marketing term.
Yeah. I'll get there in just a second. But which one is going to – well, I'll go ahead with that. I think toned is the look that people have of what we call residual tension in a resting muscle, where the body looks very lithe and lean and athletic, even if it's sitting still. And then when the person moves, it's a poetry of the way the parts move together. So there's a coordination aspect involved in it too. And I think it's a product of leanness and a product of strength and muscular coordination all the way around. But back to the original thing was, which is going to burn more calories and cause more strength, which in turn will translate into more tone of the muscle, doing light dumbbell curls or doing pull-ups, right?
Right.
Well, which one's harder? The one that's harder is probably going to be the one that gets it done. So, you know, the whole paradigm shift like that really made a lot of sense to me. No longer did I have to spend 90 minutes in the gym to get everything done. I could be done, if I really busted it, doing something like kettlebell swings or snatches, I could be done in 15, 20 minutes and get more work done and get a better result. So unless you're just addicted to the stimulus of going to the gym and hanging out with people, then there's no real need to go longer than about 40 minutes. And if you're addicted to that stimulus, then you're going as a hobby,
right?
As entertainment, not in order to get results. And that was the big paradigm shift for me going through the RKC. Then when I realized that I could use what I had learned to impact other people the same way and to also make a living at it, it was a no-brainer for me. I threw myself headlong into it and began to soak up everything that I could about programming and nutrition and training, and very much approaching it with the Bruce Lee Jeet Kune Do philosophy aspect. You know, he gets misquoted on this a lot, or he gets quoted out of context with the whole phrase, absorb what is useful.
Right.
But if you look at that phrase in its entirety, what he says is research your own experience, absorb what is useful, reject what is useless, and make it distinctly your own. So I set about the process of researching my own experience. I can't tell you if I don't like the taste of a particular kind of food if I have never put it in my mouth. I can't decide one way or the other. Do I like it or not? I don't know. So I set about learning as much as I could about programming, kettlebell lifting, the physiology inherent in tension and relaxation. And I came to the point that I am now where the RKC and the hard style of kettlebell training that we do is what I believe is the ultimate in athletic development and kettlebell lifting, if for no other reason than it works, obviously, because if you look at our track record, we've turned out some tremendous athletes in other sports. You know, guys like Donnie Thompson, who holds the world all-time powerlifting total. Lots of boxers, martial artists, a lot of the UFC guys are doing it now. And, of course, you've mentioned earlier about celebrities. I've noticed guys like Matthew McConaughey and ladies like, her name is escapes me right now, Selma Hayek and J-Lo, you know, they're using them. So what they're looking for and what we should all be looking for is maximum result in the minimum amount of time. And the hard style of kettlebell training the RKC teaches propagates that. And the other thing that I really am impressed with constantly, continually, is that our system is evolving over time, all the time. I just got back 2 days ago from an RKC instructor course where I was teaching with Pavel and Brett Jones and Jeff O'Connor, and some of the stuff that is in the manual now and in the course now in October of 2008 has been streamlined from as recently as April when I taught the last course. Some of the stuff we constantly at the end, look at it, say, okay, what worked, what didn't work, why, what can we make it better? So that's kind of how I wound up where I am now. I run local classes in Nashville, and I have worked with a few celebrities like you talked about earlier, but they have asked me not to be public about it, so I'm going to respect their privacy on that. I've worked with Vanderbilt's football team, their strength and conditioning coaches, and they went from not being a very good team a couple of years ago to, if I'm not mistaken, they haven't lost a game yet, and we're almost halfway through the season. And they're winning games in the fourth quarter, which is, you know, where it stops being about conditioning and starts being about conditioning, if you know what I mean.
Exactly. Gut check time.
So that's kind of how I wound up where I am now.
Okay.
And you got to cut me off if I start to ramble because I get excited about this stuff. And I'll just...
Yeah, but that's the thing about it. I want you to get excited. You know, that's the reason why I brought you on the call, because I love your enthusiasm, because it's good to see someone out there just as enthusiastic about kettlebells the way that I am. So people don't know it's not just me, and I'm not just the only nut in the world. I have company.
Yeah.
So, and there's hundreds of other guys out there just like me. And you,
well, and the question came up as recently as this past weekend with some new RKC candidates. How do I sell the kettlebell idea to people that it's going to work, that they can stop doing the kind of training I was describing earlier and convert to using the kettlebell? How can I convince people of this? And my response to them was, put the kettlebell in their hand and let the kettlebell do the talking.
Exactly.
Because people, you can go and pull up the YouTube clips all day and think you know what's going on.
Yeah, but until you've actually, bad boys.
Yeah, but until you've actually wrapped your hands around one and done something with it, there's not a person alive that I can think of that I couldn't almost completely bury in 15 minutes from a strength and conditioning standpoint with two exercises, a swing and a Turkish get-up. Now, my objective is not to bury people. My objective is to get whatever result we decide is in order. But as far as being effective as a conditioning tool, you know, if it comes time to ramp it up, if I were working with a fighter who's doing, you know, 3 5-minute rounds, that's exactly the kind of thing I would do with them. I would destroy them for 5 minutes, give them a minute break, rinse and repeat until the time for the, you know,
I was about to say, I will admit that's brutal because I do that with a lot of my workouts, you know, just kind of keep my conditioning up for Muay Thai.
Mm-hmm.
And, dude, those 5 rounds of that, with that one minute, I don't know, for some reason that minute is probably the fastest minute of your life.
Kettlebells alter the space-time continuum. They do.
But trust me, those 3 minutes, it's the longest of your life. It's
absolutely.
Like, when is that time? I look at that gym boss like, when is it going to go off? I think the battery's dead. I need to get a new battery.
Yes.
No, I still have another minute left. Shut up. Get back to swinging.
Mm-hmm.
Stop stopping and looking at the clock. Get to work.
And I'm sure you've noticed, too, as a result of doing a proper kettlebell swing, your kicking and punching has gotten stronger.
Brutal. Brutal. My sparring partners hate it, especially they can't understand how I can kick so powerfully with the left foot, with my left shin or whatever, just like my right.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, yeah, because I'm training equally now. It's not like I'm doing all these isolated exercises
right,
like I did back in the day where I'm stronger on one side and weaker on the other one. I'm like, no, it's not even like that anymore. So it's overall body conditioning now, and that's what I love about kettlebells. You hit
I call it full body power, you know. And actually, the most recent DVD you didn't mention earlier, the most recent product that I've got out is Full Body Power Kettlebells Beyond the Basics. It's at fullbodypower.com, and I'm not trying to shamelessly plug anything during a charity event here, but it's got some interesting stuff on it. My take on the next step past just swings and get-ups, but the whole notion of full body power. If I can punch or kick or run or throw with all of the power from my heels up through the top of my head, including my toes and little fingers, then why not line all that up, you know?
Exactly.
If nothing else, you get the same amount of output with less effort and allows you to go longer.
Now,
so,
And you're just talking about, you know, well, I just spoke to you about my training with Muay Thai. Like, I know you yourself you've been in martial arts for a long time as well. And expound, like, just how kettlebell training has helped you with your martial arts training.
Yeah, I am. When I first started training with kettlebells, I kind of let my martial arts stuff fall by the wayside because I was so absorbed with it and didn't do much of anything for the better part of 3 years, probably. And I got back together with one of the guys that I used to practice Filipino martial arts with, and we were doing some stick drills, and what seemed like the same amount of effort to me, swinging a stick, was knocking the stick out of the guy's hand. And he had been training the whole time. He didn't take time off like I did. So I'm like, why am I hitting harder? He's like, you know, back off. What are you doing? And but he could tell that it was a relaxed. I wasn't hitting him with everything I had. But, you know, 20% of what I have now was maybe 60% of what I used to have. And it's because I made my nervous system smarter, you know, because being strong doesn't necessarily mean big. Like Brett Jones says, he's one of the other instructors in the RKC. Big ain't big. Strong, or I'm sorry, let me start over. I'm misquoting Brett. Big ain't strong. Strong is strong.
Right.
And that explains why we have little wiry guys who are able to put out a lot of strength. Well, why does that happen? They have, through their training, developed their nervous system to the point that they're getting more contraction out of a muscle than someone else who hasn't done that kind of training would get with the same amount of effort. And the kettlebell does a lot to perpetuate that with things like the swing and snatch, these explosive movements, what we call ballistic movements. There's an explosion in the weight travels. Not just on the concentric or lifting part, but also on the eccentric or the lowering part. Because if you do a snatch overhead with a kettlebell that weighs, say, 24 kilos, as you throw that kettlebell back between your legs to start the next rep, it's fallen. Say if you're my height, it's fallen from seven and a half feet overhead down between your legs. It's falling 5 feet, maybe 6 feet, in a curve.
Yeah.
So just the physics of that amplify the force. It magnifies it so that when it hits its lowest point before you reverse and change directions, it weighs, I don't know how many more times, but several times more than what the actual mass of the kettlebell would indicate if you did the physics on it. I have a client who is a physicist who started explaining all this to me, and it just kind of made my teeth hurt, and I looked at him and said, yeah, I know it's heavier because it feels heavier at the bottom, and I pick up iron balls and bend steel bars and tear phone books for a living, so your physics is beyond me now. Just shut up and swing, you know. But both ends of the scientific spectrum were in agreement between him and myself, so.
Yeah. You gotta love that. And like I said, at the end of the day, like just like we were saying about the snatch, that exercise in particular, you gotta love the fact that when you're done with that thing, it's amazing.
You're done.
It's amazing what body parts you feel and you realize you probably didn't even have before. Because
yeah,
I remember
yeah.
all the time, like, is my back supposed to be? Yes. What about my
yeah.
my yes.
Yeah.
My butt? Yes. My calf? Yes.
Yes.
What about my bicep? Yeah. And you didn't have to do one freaking curl.
Yep.
Now, how does that make you feel?
Mm-hmm.
I said, you hit every body part you needed to hit. I said, even the little bones in your pinky toe.
Exactly. Exactly. And people, I'll demonstrate something like a swing or a Turkish get-up. The Turkish get-up is a famous one for this. Those two exercises, and a snatch, too, because it kind of combines two elements of the swing and the get-up. Because you got the hip snap and you got the overhead lockout. But exercises, drills like that, people will watch and that you can see their brain trying to process the information because Monday was chest day and this doesn't fit into that. And I've had multiple people ask me, what muscle does that work? And I used to try to explain it to them about, you know, movement patterns and all that sort of stuff. But finally I ripped off, and I'm not sure if it's from Dan John or from Charles Staley that I got the initial idea, but I kind of modified it a little bit. I'll look at them and I'll say, you know when the one guy takes off running down the football field and the other guy throws him the ball and that third guy comes along and knocks him on his ass? It works that muscle.
And then they're still like, okay. So basically, yes, it does. It kicks your butt. Let's go.
Yeah, and when they think about it in terms of that, is in terms of it's not a muscle that's being worked. It's an entire full-body activity that goes on. And I put the kettlebell in their hand. And, of course, the other big question is, well, I see that you're lifting things, but what do you do for cardio? So,
y'all, you're killing me because that was going to be my next question. We were going to go over that. So please explain to them and tell them about cardio and kettlebells.
Okay, I'd be glad to. We have a saying in the RKC, Mark Rifkin came up with it, I believe, that the kettlebell swing is the center of the universe. The kettlebell swing, which if the listeners don't know what a kettlebell swing is, imagine yourself in a deadlift-type position. You would swing the kettlebell back between your legs, and you would explosively straighten out your legs and your hips into full extension. You would pull up the kneecaps, tighten up the quads. You would squeeze the butt cheeks together, and you tighten and brace the abs like you're waiting for a punch. And the kettlebell's propelled up explosively. Then it'll start to fall, and the way we do it, we actually speed up the falling part by throwing it back between our legs like a hike pass.
Like a football, yeah.
Yeah, and so what that does is it's a force magnifier. It makes a relatively lightweight seem even heavier. It adds to what gravity's already doing. So we go up and down and back and forth like that, right? And it doesn't. It sounds very innocent and very innocuous when you put it that way. But you put the kettlebell in their hand after you've taught them the safe way to do the swing, and then you say swing until I get tired. And they don't ever go until I get tired. It's the funniest thing. In my classes, I usually have people swing for anywhere from 20 seconds, 15 to 20 seconds, up to a minute. Continuous or as many reps as they can squeeze into that time if they're not as well conditioned, not conditioned enough to be able to handle whatever weight they're using for that full amount of time. But the response that people give me when I say, this is what we do for cardio, swing, and they start swinging, they compare it to a lot of different things. Things like running sprints upstairs,
yeah.
Or jumping rope really fast, or the same way that punching and kicking a heavy bag with a lot of force for an extended period of time will wind you. It's that same type of effect from a cardiovascular standpoint. And I think where people run into a lot of trouble is they consider the terms cardiovascular training and aerobic training to be interchangeable, and they're not.
Right.
Aerobic, by definition, is a longer, slower, lower-intensity, steady-state type activity, like walking or jogging or something like that, using oxygen as its primary fuel source.
Right.
Cardiovascular activity is anything that causes an increase in respiration and heart rate. So if
it's funny you say that, because I say cardio is anything between running sprints or being stuck in traffic behind a dumb driver.
That's true. That's true.
It comes from doing blasting push-ups to having great sex.
Yeah,
cardio.
Yeah.
So
absolutely, absolutely.
I hate when they ask me, "Are we going to do cardio today?" I'm like, okay.
So, yeah, and anything that'll spike your breathing and your heart rate is training your cardiovascular system. It's going to have benefit of increasing your oxygen uptake. It's going to lower your resting heart rate and give you all the benefits that everybody talks about from the heart council about the aerobic benefits and how you fight off cardiovascular disease with that kind of training. Anything that spikes your heart rate is going to do that. So if I just stick a couple of kettlebells in your hands and have you walk around the block carrying those kettlebells,
yeah, man,
without setting them down, you're going to get a spike in heart rate. Mm-hmm. So I've gotten to the point when I explain it to people now, new people that come to my class, well, you're lifting weights. Do we do cardio on the off days when we're not in your class? And they don't ever ask that after they've been to class. It's always before their first class.
Right.
And I explain to them that if they want to do something extra, they are free to do so because they're grown men and women, but it's not really necessary and it's probably not going to help that much. And for the way we train, using movement patterns or exercises that are based on movement patterns that are full body activities that are geared toward developing strength, the strength training is the cardio and the cardio is the strength training. And I just do everything I can to blur the line between it. Because if you're out playing football, or you're playing tennis, or swimming, are you doing a cardio activity, or are you doing a strength activity? Yes, you are.
Yes.
And so the whole notion of compartmentalizing things goes contrary to the way God has designed your body. Your body doesn't operate as a collection of parts. Your body operates as one complete unit. There are a lot of subsystems involved with that, but it's one complete unit. The whole compartmentalization and dividing things up into pieces is something that we as humans have had to do to just be able to digest the complexity of what goes on in human physiology.
Well, how's that for your cardio?
Yeah, that's for your cardio.
So that's right up there.
And the other thing about it, people who ask about cardio are generally misguided in that they want to know about fat loss, right?
You're killing me, dude. Come on, that's my next question. Stop. Nice segue. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, let's talk about that.
We'll talk about fat loss.
Let's talk about kettlebells for fat loss.
We will talk about kettlebells for fat loss because that's my primary market.
Mine too.
That is also my biggest success, personally. I was a fairly strong guy when I got into kettlebells, but I was about 315 pounds. And I am somewhere around 260 right now. And I'm not the leanest cat in the jungle. I'm not sporting a six-pack. I will never be on the cover of Men's Health. I could still stand to drop a few pounds. That's fine. And maybe I will, maybe I won't. I'm not real sure. I'm more concerned with performance right now than I am, you know, going to the gun show. But people come to me and ask me about cardio because they think that cardio, which, again, they think cardio, but what they're really asking about is what they read about aerobics. They're getting jumbled up with that already. They think that that is the key to fat loss. The key to fat loss is what you put in your mouth, along with what you do with your kettlebell or at the gym or your jump rope or your body weight exercises or whatever you do. The key is both of those things put together with the right mindset, done consistently over time. Let me repeat that last part. Consistency over time.
Yeah.
Because 30 pounds in 30 days is a lie unless you're losing a limb. You know,
that takes isolation exercise to a whole new part.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And also, we got to differentiate between fat loss and weight loss, right?
Yes, please.
Because I'm sure you've had people come to you and say something along these lines about, you know, it's not working. What's not working? What we're doing isn't working. What do you mean it's not working? Your pants are falling off. You've had to buy new clothes. Yeah, I know. You know, and I can see the veins in your forearms now. Yeah, I know. And everybody says, look at how much smaller you are. Yeah, I know. But the scale hasn't changed.
Gotta love that one.
I'm actually thinking of doing a thing and sending out press releases here in Nashville to have a scale smashing party and have everybody bring their bathroom scales out, and we're going to drop kettlebells on them.
We should have national bust your scale up there. You know what? Everybody should just get a kettlebell. We're going to bring your scales, and we're just going to take your kettlebell and smash it.
I had a client once that was just adamant about this, and she decided she needed to start doing extra cardio. She wound up hurting her knee because she was going out and running 6 or 7 miles a day in addition to doing my class.
She got
overuse injuries.
Too.
Yeah, she got overuse injuries, and because her running form was off, and she was wearing the wrong kind of shoes, and, you know, she wasn't trained in that either, plus in addition to the stuff that we were doing in class. And she was just severely upset because, you know, she was looking great, and her clothes were falling off, but the scale hadn't changed, and she hadn't lost any weight. And I said, well, if you just want to lose weight, you can take a chainsaw to one of your legs and drop 20 or 30 pounds instantly. And we stopped working together not too long after that because...
Because
she just couldn't, she wasn't willing to let go of her preconceived notion. And my thing that I kept asking her was, if you know that what you think will work, then why hasn't it worked for the past 20 years?
That's my thing. When they say, well, before I came here, I was doing so-and-so. I was like, yeah, and how was that working for you?
Yeah,
that,
exactly.
That one question, either they get it, they have the aha moment, or they have the middle finger moment.
Yeah, exactly.
For lack of a better term.
And I'm sure that being in the fitness business, you get emails and stuff from people who want to know what do you think about whatever, right? What do you think about my new program? What do you think about this product? What do you think about this and this? I've come to realize when people ask me that I've never talked to before, they don't want to know what my opinion is. They want me to agree with what they already think.
Exactly. They want me to validate their decision.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, that's not what I'm here to do.
Yeah, and then if I don't, then, you know, I'm the bad guy. But anyway, going back to kettlebells for fat loss, the way I structure workouts with my local classes are geared toward fat loss and conditioning in that sort of arena. I don't really have a lot of guys or ladies that are coming to me saying, I want to use kettlebells to get huge, or I want to use kettlebells to help myself out as a fighter, or to go up a weight class, or anything like that. Most of the people that are in my my local classes come in on, and they want to get on the what I call look good naked plan.
Yeah.
And so we will, typically a class will go something like this. We will do a few minutes of joint mobility stuff, stuff that I've put together from various different sources, some of it martial arts based and Qigong based, some of it based off of what I've learned from Pavel is the super joints and relaxing to stretch stuff. Not so much the relaxing to stretch, more the super joints and resilient stuff, what I meant to say, and or some Z-Health type stuff. I don't know much about Z-Health yet, but that's one of the things that I'm looking to get into a little bit more.
Yeah.
After we get good and loosened up, notice I didn't say warmed up. I said loosened up because I think there's a distinct difference there. I think if you need a warm-up, you're training wrong.
Right.
I think that you should be ready for anything at any given time. Because if you think back in history, you know, 10,000 years ago, the guy walking through the jungle dragging a dead deer, you know, armed with just a stick with a rock tied to the end of it, saber-toothed tiger jumps out in front of him. He doesn't say, "Hold up, cat, I got to get on the, treadmill and, you know, walk at 70% of my max heart rate to loosen up, and then I'll deal with you after that." No, he had to be instantly ready to go into action, and that kind of thing. Or if you look at, you know, back at Roman soldiers and Greek soldiers and that sort of stuff, they would march all day, and they might have to fight right now. They didn't have time to, you know, stretch or tape up their hamstring or whatever, you know. So I find that if you train the way that we're taught in the RKC, not only do you wind up eliminating or recovering from pre-existing injuries, you become more resistant and resilient, more injury-proof in the long run. So we do this loosening up stuff to just kind of get everybody awake more than warmed up. And that way, if they have been just kind of sitting around and kind of gummed up their joints or something over the course of sitting at their computer all day, we get them loosened up a little bit. But I'm not really concerned with warming up overall. Then we will go into usually some sort of a primary strength type of thing. I have a few different things I do. Some days it's just Turkish get-ups. And sometimes we do them in a partner fashion, like if you and I were partners, Sincere, you would do one on each side and I would do one on each side. And we would just do that at whatever pace we decide to set for 10 to 12 minutes, 15 minutes, something like that. Or it might be, okay, you're on your own for 10 minutes doing get-ups, alternating reps each side. And then you can set your own pace that way. And what I've come to develop in doing this sort of stuff is a class format that will allow me to have people who are in really good physical condition training alongside, even partnered up with people who aren't in the best condition that they could possibly be in yet because they've just started out. And because we do most things for time rather than for reps, then it tends to work out that way. Another strength type thing that we might do during that portion of class is I might set up a few different stations. I might have a push-up station and then a lunging station or a squatting station and then maybe a rowing station doing like a, you know, bent over rows with kettlebells. And we'll set the timer and give them maybe a minute of each exercise and a 30-second break in between, and during which they rotate. So you would go from the push-up station to the squat station to the row station, back to the push-up station, and so forth. And, again, going for time rather than for number of reps, that way I'm not saying, okay, do 20 push-ups. Well, Grandma Betty might only be able to do 3 push-ups. She might need to do 1 and sit there and suck wind for 20 seconds and then do another one. Whereas, you know, Joe Sixpack next to her might, you know, knock out 50 clapping push-ups in a minute. You know, we got different variations that can be done within the given time period. So that way I'm able to appeal to more people. My client base is the people who are sick of the gym.
Yeah.
So, you know, we're outdoors in the park probably 9-10 months out of the year in the fresh air, rolling around in the dirt. And so we do that sort of stuff. Then I'll give them a little break, tell them to get some water after we finish that up, and then we'll go into the, help me for saying it, cardio portion of things, which is really more based on an interval training idea. That I have to give props to Alan Cosgrove for turning me onto this particular, I'm not even going to call it a template because it's not that set in stone. This kind of, like, concept of doing the circuit type stuff followed up by the interval stuff.
Yeah, kind of yeah.
It'll be either swings or snatches, or if it's a body weight day, we might do burpees, you know, squat thrust with a jump, or we might do squat and press with a kettlebell, a light kettlebell, at a fairly fast pace. So we do that sort of thing. And some days we'll do it for 30 seconds to a minute, and then they take a little jog for a few hundred yards and come back. And that might take a minute and a half to 2 minutes. Yeah. Or some days we might do it again partnered off in ladders. If everybody there is capable of doing, you know, 25 to 30 swings with whatever kettlebell they're working with, I might pair them off and say do ladders with the kettlebell swing. And by ladders, what I mean is, again, if you and I were partners and we were doing a swing ladder, it would go like this. Just an example. The numbers are kind of arbitrary, but this is the concept. Say I would do 10 swings, and then you would rest while I was working.
Right.
And then when I put my kettlebell down, you would do 10 swings, and I would rest while you were working. Then on the next set, we might do 15 each. And then the next set, we might do 20. So we're climbing the ladder 5 reps at a time. When we get to whatever the top is, in this case, we use 20 reps as an example, we go back to 10. So we're always on the way up. It's not up and then back down with the ladder. And the rest periods get built in that way automatically because I'm resting while you're working. Mm-hmm. So that's an effective way to cram a lot of volume into a short period of time.
Here's a question. Why don't you come back down the ladder?
Because the idea is to spike intensity and then recover, spike intensity and then recover. So if we start out at 10 reps, that's fairly easy. 15 reps is a little bit harder. 20 reps might be as hard as we can stand. Okay. To come back down to a little bit harder doesn't give us as good a chance to rest as going all the way back to the beginning. So we get a little bit longer rest period in there. It lowers the intensity more and enables us to go harder for longer because of the whole, you know, the idea of the interval training, which is spike it hard, back off, spike it hard, back off. So the intervals are built in like that. It allows greater volume because we're able to go longer with the same amount of intensity.
Okay.
And then some days it might just be we might just do 30 seconds on, 30 seconds off of swings for 10 minutes. They hate it when I do that. Oh, they hate it. Until they have to go buy new clothes. I got one lady in my class that she just turned 39. She's been with me for about a year. She's on the high side of the 60, so she's between 65 and 70 pounds now, which, you know, that's an Olsen twin she's lost, right? And for the bulk of it, she was that lady that started out, and she cleaned her diet up and started busting it, and her weight didn't change at all for about 3 months. But her clothes started falling off. She's like, I don't know what's going on. Things are strange. I'm moving better. I feel better. My clothes are falling off, but my weight's not changed. I'm like, just shut up and swing. It's working.
Yeah.
And she bared with me on that. Then she finally got to the point that none of her clothes that she had fit well enough for her to bother wearing anymore, so she took them and gave them to Goodwill.
Right.
And she realized while she was there that she could buy clothes that fit at Goodwill because she knew she wasn't going to stay where she was, that she was going to get more of the same. And the Goodwill here in Nashville, doesn't sell, well, I think they sell clothes by the piece. You know, you might buy a shirt for 50 cents or a dollar or something like that. But they also sell clothes by the pound. You can take a box in and fill it up with clothes, and they weigh it, and you pay $5 or $10 or whatever it is.
Wow.
So she was joking one day that she went and bought a pound of shirts.
That sounds so crazy.
Buying a pound of shirts,
yeah,
to make up for the fact that she's lost, you know, 30 pounds of body weight. And I'm like, that's a good trade.
It's a good deal right there. I'll take it.
Yeah, and the other thing about fat loss, like I said earlier, is diet. And diet, nutrition is one of those things. I know you just had Jason Hunter on, and Jason knows his stuff. I've read some of his stuff. I've talked to him. I would have no problem whatsoever recommending Jason or Mike Russell or John Berardi, any of those guys. They all know their stuff. I personally have been doing an experiment with Ori Hofmeckler's Warrior Diet recently.
I have too. I've been doing it for like the last 6 months.
And I absolutely love it.
Love it.
I love not having to stop what I'm doing to eat every 3 hours. But without going into the details of any of what those guys are doing with their diet, the main most important thing that overrides all of that is consistency, right? Because if we start talking about nutrition, we might as well be talking about politics or religion to some people. They latch on to an idea, no, low fat is the only way to go. If you eat more than 10 grams of fat a day, you'll stroke out and die. No, low carb is the only way to go. If you eat more than 10 grams of carb a day, you'll blast your pancreas out of your body. You know what, people? It's just food. Let it go. It's food.
I've had someone tell me, Dave, God didn't intend for us to eat carbs. I was like, wow. I'm pretty well-educated with religion and Bible. I really know the Bible. I mean, I don't remember that verse.
And yeah.
I remember manna falling down from the sky. I'm thinking that's a carb.
Well, yeah, bread from heaven, right?
Yeah.
Something about our daily bread. I don't know.
Yeah.
But,
but anyway.
You know. Yeah, well, and if you really want to talk from a Christian perspective anyway about what God meant for us to eat, I guess from a Muslim perspective too, because I'm talking Old Testament here, you go back and read Leviticus chapter 11, look at the kosher Levitical diet. That's what God said to do. So, you know, I don't want to – see, here you go. You start talking about nutrition, right. Next thing you know,
hey man, it's a political
it goes
man.
Like that. You know, and if we keep going, we'll wind up talking about Obama and McCain, so we need to probably just – head out somewhere different with that. But the thing about it, you get around people, mm-hmm, and you start talking about nutrition, and if they've ever done anything that worked even the slightest bit for them or had any scientific studies to back it up, which I can go on the internet right now and find scientific study that will prove to you that weight training will make you weak.
Yeah.
And I'll talk more about that in just a second. But you
think about those scientific studies. Usually a few years later, they have to recant them.
Exactly. Exactly. So here's my take when I talk to people about nutrition when they ask me, I don't care what you do, just do it all the time. If you're Atkins this week and low fat next week and Warrior Diet the week after that and junk food the week after that, you're not going to get anywhere. Or if you're walking around saying that you're following, say, Jason Hunter's plan or John Berardi's Precision Nutrition or the Warrior Diet, but you're not actually doing what the system says,
see,
then you're not doing what the system says. And you can't say, well, I tried that and it didn't work.
Yeah, but they tried an aspect that they heard a friend probably tell them about, like Atkins. Well, it says don't eat any carbs. Or the lemonade diet. It's not a diet.
Right, or the Warrior Diet. Don't eat all day, eat big at night. You know, that's one of the biggest things that I get and from people. Well, you know, actually read the material and put it into practice. It goes back to what I was saying earlier about research your own experience, right? Which, like I said a minute ago, if you want to talk about scientific studies, I can guarantee that I can prove to you with scientific study that weight training will make you weak the same way that I can prove that aerobic training burns more fat, right? Because, and again, I owe this one to Alan Cosgrove. If you look at the study that discovered the mythical fat burning zone, all they did was measure the percentage of calories being burned from fat during the aerobic activity or during the anaerobic activity, and a greater percentage of the total calories burned came from fat in each one of those. And that's all it says. That has gotten misinterpreted. Okay, sure, you're burning more total calories or burning more a greater percentage of calories from fat during the activity. But if you're only burning 100 calories and you're burning, say, 40% of them from fat during that activity, and then the other activity, which, say, maybe a long cycle clean and jerk with kettlebells for the same duration of time, you're burning 400 calories, and you're only burning half the amount, 20% from fat, you're still burning twice as many calories, if I'm doing my math right in my head. My numbers may be off a little bit. To simplify that a little bit, would you rather have 50% of $100 or 20% of $10,000? It's a no-brainer, right?
Yeah.
So if you look at scientific studies on strength training, what happens during the workout? Muscle gets damaged, right?
Exactly.
So
what happens if lifting...
the adaptation comes afterwards. So if I'm lifting a weight or doing resistance training and I'm damaging muscles and we use that same logic, then we can come to the logical conclusion that training with resistance will make you weak and damage your muscles, right?
Exactly.
But anybody with half a brain can go pick up something heavy and get stronger and realize through researching their own experience that the truth is that resistance training will make you stronger. Anybody who's out on what I call the old lady plan, lifting soup cans, walking 2 miles a day, and eating low fat, like some of the more popular diet groups recommend, if they do that and log their results over 6 months and realize that nothing happened, researching your own experience will let you know that approach isn't the most effective one. So
time to do something else.
Time to do something else.
If something doesn't work, do the opposite.
Yeah.
Simple.
If something does work, keep doing it. You know, if you start training with kettlebells and drop 30 pounds, I'm going to go start, power walking now.
The
program works so well, I quit doing it.
Yeah. Do what works, but just evolve that program.
Yeah, absolutely. So that's the big thing that I like about kettlebells is you can get a lot of work done. This work is spread over the whole body. It makes you stronger. It burns a lot more calories.
Mm-hmm.
It's a compact, portable thing. You know, every year that I've been involved in doing this, that my wife and I have gone on vacation, I've just thrown a kettlebell in the car, and we'll go wherever, and I'm out on the beach.
Yeah,
you know, doing snatches, and people are looking at me like, who's this crazy man?
Oh, yeah. My girlfriend and I just did that on a recent trip to Austin. As soon as we pull up to the hotel, we're going through the lobby. We have our kettlebells in hand.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just funny because everybody looked at us like, what are those? And then I heard one guy like, oh, my God, dude, they got kettlebells. They rock. And they were like, and you hear all his friends, what are those? What do you mean? What are those things? They're like, dude, you don't know?
Yeah.
And that's the last of the conversation I heard before the elevator doors closed. And
that's
we
cool.
just laughed.
Yeah, it's cool. So, you know, the other thing, people can sometimes be put off by the cost of or the expense of things, not really weighing the cost and the value. And I know that sounds like semantics again, but I've met plenty of people, guys that'll spend $200 or $300 a month on super high speed badass jacked up supplement number 7 or whatever because they think it's going to get them a result, and it didn't work last month, and it didn't work the month before that. But they read that Jay Cutler uses it, so whatever. Or they'll go spend, you know, $150 on a pair of shoes. But, you know, to drop $100, $150 on a single kettlebell, dude, that's too expensive for a little piece of iron.
But these are the same. But a lot of times, these are the same people that will stay up and watch a late night infomercial and buy a DVD, which pretty much will give you the same exercise. Every time you pop it in, you're gonna see that same workout. They'll buy that DVD set for 3 payments of $40 each.
Right.
You know, pretty much almost the same. They probably would have paid for 2 kettlebells, depending
exactly.
on watching this. You know,
exactly.
All you got was a DVD. You don't even have anything to work out with the DVD.
Yeah. or the one that I'm really fond of is the when people get the treadmill and it's the $1,200 clothes rack.
Yeah.
So I tell people that the only problem with the value of a kettlebell is when you decide to quit. Because you did decide to quit. You didn't just kind of stop doing it. You decided to quit, just like you decided to start. When you decide to quit, you can't hang your clothes on it like you can your treadmill or your – what was that health rider thing that Tony Little used to sell?
Oh, dude, the gazelle.
Yeah, that thing. Yeah. So, but if you look at a kettlebell, it's a piece of cast iron. You will
like,
be
oh,
able
I got
to
a paperweight.
Yeah, you can will it to your grandchildren. You ain't going to wear it out. You ain't going to break it. You know, so the way I look at it, if I spend $150 on something and it will last me literally the rest of my life, that's a pretty good deal.
And something's got to be good about it. It's been around for well over 100 years, so.
Yep.
Guess what? It'll be around for another 100. It's going to outlast you. So make the most of it while you're here.
Absolutely.
So with that being said, David, since we only have a few more minutes left, how should someone get started with kettlebells, especially for fat loss? Because we didn't really get a chance to go into talking about as far as, like, for athletes and MMA training and things like that, which we can do that on another call. Trust me.
Mm-hmm.
I have a totally different program for that one. But for someone looking for fat loss, how do they get started?
Well, if you go to my website, irontamer.com, there's links on there in the little store part. The Power Circuit Workout DVD that you talked about earlier is an excellent place to start. There's links on there to go to Dragon Door. You can go directly to dragondoor.com, get your kettlebell there, and get Pavel's book and DVD, Enter the Kettlebell. If someone is just looking for the get started kind of kit thing to get them going, I do recommend with kettlebells, because there is a certain amount of risk involved if you use poor technique, to seek out a qualified instructor from the RKC, and get, you know, go ahead and fork over the money, and that way you won't have to pay for back surgery later from doing stuff wrong. And if anybody is interested in that and wants to contact me directly, irontamerdave@hotmail.com. I'll try to point you in the right direction based on what area of the country you live in. But really, you just need a kettlebell and a little bit of space, preferably outside, and a little bit of instruction, and you're good to go. You can get a ton of mileage out of just the swing and the Turkish get-up. I still, to this day, during my own programming for myself, will cycle through workouts of nothing but get-ups and swings, or sometimes nothing but get-ups and then another workout, nothing but swings. And with my local classes, during any four-week period, each week we'll have one day that is devoted to get-ups and swings, and that's all.
All right. Well, first of all, thanks a lot for coming on and dropping some science on us about kettlebells, especially for fat loss, and taking time out of your busy day. I know I said it's going to keep you here for about 50 minutes, but come on, man. You were giving some good stuff. I didn't want to stop your flow.
That's cool. And I don't know if I'd call it science or not. It's more like redneck wisdom, I guess.
Hey, this brown redneck appreciates it. So, again, David Whitley here, came on the show, helped us out, gave us a 411 on kettlebells for fat loss. Make sure you check him out at irontamer.com for more information. Thank you, David, once again, and hope to have you back really soon. And if you ever need anything, brother, hit me up. And to all our listeners out there, thank you so much for your donations and listening live during the webcast and via telephone right now, or if you're listening to the replay.